It's time for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with your host, Master Business Coach Doug Gefeller.
Well, that was a kind of a slow start by the producer there, but hey, he's getting ready for a 3-day weekend.
So that's right.
Cut him some slack.
You know what? I'm already getting in the zone for Zen golf here. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I knew this one would appeal to you, and you could use the help.
Boy, it sure is a different way than I play golf, I'll tell you.
Okay. Well, welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. Today we're going to be talking with Dr. Joe Parent, a highly regarded coach of performance psychology in sports, the arts, and business, both as a consultant and as an executive coach. And he's going to introduce us to a new perspective on ourselves and on our relationships with others through his unique blend of modern Western psychology and venerable Eastern wisdom, with occasional examples from the world of golf. Well, before we get to Dr. Joe, if you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. Be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some great guests from the past. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, or HR professionals to interview. So just drop me an email at doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Well, using performance psychology in sports, the arts, and business with Dr. Joe Parent. You know, his first book, the number one bestseller, Zen Golf, Mastering the Mental Game, is now in its 15th U.S. printing with over 250,000 copies sold worldwide, including editions in 9 different languages. Dr. Parent has spoken at numerous conferences, meetings, management retreats, and training programs for a wide variety of businesses and associations. He introduces participants to new perspectives on themselves and their relationships with others through his unique blend of Western psychology and Eastern wisdom. Dr. Joe, welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show.
Thanks, Doug. It's a pleasure to be on.
Oh, we're honored to have you here. Our producer is really honored to have you here. Maybe one of the world's worst golfers, but
well, you know, there's a joke about that. This guy goes over to Scotland to play, and his caddy is giving him a pretty hard time, and all the way through the round. And at the end, he said to the caddy, "You know, I think you must be the worst caddy in the world." And the caddy said, "I don't think so. It would be far too much of a coincidence."
Okay, I see we're going to have a great show here today. Well, look, tell us a little bit about what you did before what you're doing now, if that makes any sense to you.
I understand. I got my PhD in social psychology in 1980, and I've also been teaching and practicing mindfulness in the Buddhist tradition since 1975. I combined them in stress management work and then really moved into mindfulness-based peak performance coaching for golf, for business, and for life. My keynote speaking and my business consulting really picked up after my first book was published, which is Zen Golf, Mastering the Mental Game, and the accomplishments that I had on the PGA and LPGA tours. You know, the real start was as a young man. I was at Cornell University, and I was in engineering. And one day I was just walking along saying, you know, I don't know that I want to be like my father with a 9-to-5 job. What do I want to do with my life? And something came to me about coaching and teaching. And I thought, well, you know, really, what do I want to teach? And I thought about math and science because I was in engineering and I was always good at that. But something came to me again and said, well, why don't you teach what you're interested in, which is, you know, why I do the sometimes silly, sometimes crazy things I do and why other people do. Basically, why we get ourselves in trouble with self-defeating behavior. And I thought, you know, that sounds like psychology. So I walked right over and switched my major to psychology. And on the form, when it said, why do you want to major in psychology, I wrote, to find out why I want to major in psychology.
Okay. Hey, explain to me. You said the British version of mindfulness or something like that. What did you mean there?
No, the Buddhist.
The
From the Buddhist tradition.
The Buddhist, I'm glad I asked, because I didn't get that clear.
Yeah, sorry, a lot of people pronounce it Buddhist, but it's really Buddhist.
Okay.
And it's, you know, my teacher was, my main teacher was from Tibet, and he escaped when the communist Chinese invaded Tibet, and he came and took off the robes and wore Western garb and spoke English. He learned English so he could communicate to students in the West. And his main student was an American who I was also a close student of. And I've been trained and a senior instructor in mindfulness through that. And that's why, for business, I'm a corporate mindfulness consultant.
Okay, great. And I want to hear more about that as we move along here today.
Yeah, we'll do that.
But before we do that, tell us, describe your business today. What is it that you do? How do you do it? And who do you do it with?
Well, as I said, corporate mindfulness coach. I'm also an executive coach. And a big part of my business is working in the golf industry as a mental game coach. I also have some actors and dancers that I've worked with. So that's why I talk about business and sports and the arts, because it's all performance, and it's about getting out of your own way and getting the most out of your abilities. So that's my, you know, one of the things I coach in business is I coach people to have elevator speeches. How do you present yourself in just a few words that are going to be interesting to people? And for me, it's I help people like you get out of your own way and get the most out of your abilities.
And I see you're based in Ojai Valley?
I teach out of the Ojai Valley Inn and Spa Resort. That's where I teach golf and also do my mindfulness seminars.
That's a tough location to work out of. I feel so sorry for you.
Well, I have a pretty good situation. People pay me to play golf with them and tell them what to do. And as golfers, we all know we hate being told what to do, but we love telling people what to do.
Isn't that the truth?
So I try to make them enjoy it when I tell them what to do, because I try to always put a positive spin on things. One of the golf writers called me the spin doctor, because even if you hit a shot way off into the rough on the right, I'll say something like, "Oh, it's a good angle at the pin from there." You gotta stay positive. That's a lot of what I teach.
And I know we're going to get into this, but that's no different in sport. What I hear you saying, it's no different in sports than it is in business or dancing or the arts or acting or anything else, right?
Any kind of performance, if you're going into it with an avoiding mentality, with saying, how do I get through this without making a mistake, you invite mistakes. But if you have a positive image of what you're trying to accomplish, everything about your being will line up with that positive image.
And, you know, I can hear the business people kind of groaning in the audience going, what I do is performance?
Yes, what you do is performance. Do you have to make a presentation at a sales meeting? That's performance. Do you have to gather your team together and lay out a project and give feedback? It's all performance. Everything we do is we're performing our lives.
So your first book was a great hit. What you have more books in the works?
Yes, in fact, I'm working on the most recent book was How to Make Every Putt, and that's doing well. Zen Golf was the big hit, and now I'm working on a follow-up for business called The Zen of Success, in which I'll use some of the Zen stories that I include and others that I include in Zen Golf. I'm interested in having several CEOs tell me some of their stories and some of their insights in what leads them to success in their performance in business. And then I'm going to match up the Zen stories, the CEO stories, and then give my commentary on them.
That's
so
great.
If there are CEOs listening who are interested in the mindfulness and the Zen perspective, I'd love to talk with them. That would be great.
Okay, and if they don't happen to be listening today, I have got a great list of CEOs we've had on the show over the years, and I'm going to send it to you early next week so that these are people that have got wonderful stories to tell, and I'm sure you would enjoy talking to them, so we'll follow up with that.
Sounds great. See, we're networking already.
Already. Well, you know, we had Rick Itzkowitz last week talk about LinkedIn networking, and my brain is just cemented into networking ever since then. So,
That's great.
You also have some DVDs that you're working on?
Yes, I produced a Mental Game Mastery series of DVDs, and also I recorded my own audiobooks of all four of the books that I've published. I've recorded the audiobooks for those. And I find that people nowadays, a lot of the golfers find that listening, they really find themselves connecting better than reading. And I think it goes with the learning types. You know, in sports psychology, we look at visual learners, auditory learners, and kinesthetic or feel learners. And you have to demonstrate what you're trying to accomplish in these three different modalities. And so a lot of people connect better with the audiobook even than the written word.
I can see where that would be true. One of the questions that we ask all of our guests, and we've really enjoyed the answers, is we've asked them, you know, tell us about a particular experience or a key lesson for you that has really sort of helped shape your guiding principle in life. And I know I let you know I was going to ask this, and you've told me you've got a great story. So share that with our audience, would you please?
I'd love to. You know, one of them is about how to teach or coach. And I was an undergraduate teaching assistant at Cornell and had my first class. I had two discussion sections for the same Psych 101 class. And I met with one of the classes. There were about 17 people in each. And I said, well, if you understand this, then you understand that. If you understand that, then you understand these things. And if you understand these things, then ta-da. And everybody's jaw dropped open. And it was like an aha moment for the whole class. I went, man, that really worked. So in the next class, I went through the same sequence. If you understand this, you understand that. If you understand that, you understand these. And if you understand these, then ta-da, nothing. Maybe a yawn. And that was a very revealing moment for me. I understood you can't do a canned presentation. You have to tune into the people that are there that you're working with, and everything has to be fresh every single time. And the metaphor that one of my teachers gave for that is you use the same recipe for your bread, but one loaf of bread doesn't last that long and it becomes stale. So you have to bake the bread from the same recipe, but you bake the bread fresh every day. So every presentation I make, it's never a canned speech. It's never a canned presentation. I always try to be in tune with the audience.
You know, and if I liken back to my my own mother and watching her bake, she was great at baking things. And when we got her to write down the recipes and tried to emulate them, they were never quite the same because she modified it a little bit based upon how she felt that day, who she was serving, who she was making it for. And, you know, that it wasn't a canned presentation. It was customized from the basic recipe every time.
So that's that's the story that I wanted to share. You asked me about the guiding principle.
Yeah.
And it's really what I'd call the signature story in Zen golf. I was going to read it, but I think I don't want it to be a canned presentation. So I'll tell you the story. There was a young man who had a little statue. It was a family heirloom, and he prized it a lot because it represented the family, and it was a clay statue. And he always wished that it were gold. So when he got old enough to get some part-time jobs and save a little money, he took the statue down to a jewelry store and he had it gold leafed. He had it gold-plated. And everybody was admiring and saying, oh, what a beautiful gold statue. This is great. The only problem is gold leaf doesn't stick to clay very well, so it kept flaking off in places. And he found himself using all his time and energy to earn money to keep the gold facade of his statue intact. And one day his grandfather came home from a trip of many years, and he was excited about showing him the statue, but he was a little embarrassed because there were a couple of splotches of clay showing through. He said to he showed it and he said, I'm going to get it covered real soon. And the old man took the statue lovingly, and he held it in his hand and he moistened his handkerchief, and he rubbed one of the clay spots and he said, you know, when you were very, very young, this statue fell in the mud and got covered in clay. And look here. And he showed and where he'd been rubbing, a bright yellow spot shone through. He said, you never needed to cover your statue in gold. You just needed to gently remove the clay and reveal the solid gold statue that you possessed all along. We are that gold. Everybody has that inherent richness and goodness, and we want to focus on what's right about you rather than what's wrong about you. And if business leaders work with their team, with their employees, and focus on what's right about them and remove the clay that gets in the way of that talent, that ability, that skill to come through, you're having a richness model rather than a poverty model.
I love where you're coming from with that. And of course, it ties in so strongly with coaching, which is all about working on your strengths. And that's where you have the greatest opportunity for true breakthrough performance.
That is absolutely true. In fact, when I work with my players, when I work with the business leaders that I'm doing executive coaching with, we don't talk about strengths and weaknesses. We talk about strengths and areas for potential improvement.
I like
you can hear
that.
The difference.
Yeah.
So language is a very important thing in that regard. You said your producer is a golfer, and you know in golf language has a very strong effect. If you hit it in the woods, they say you're dead. Well, that's a harsh penalty for a bad golf shot, death. So all it means is you have a difficult next shot. So we have to change our language to reflect what the actual situation is.
And how do you find in your business coaching, how are business people towards accepting this concept?
It's very successful. You know, one of my keynotes is titled, You Must Be Present to Win. You ever have one of those little raffle tickets?
Sure.
And it says on the back, You Must Be Present to Win?
Yep.
Well, this is what mindfulness is about. You must be present to win. If you're dwelling in the past, or you're obsessed about what might go wrong in the future, you're not present. And you're not relating with what's actually going on in front of you. So when I help people work with their minds through mindfulness, they spend more time in the present, tuned into things in a non-judgmental way, in a simply noticing. We call it bare attention. But by noticing what's going on without clouding it with emotional reactivity, you get a tremendous amount of leverage and insight into how you can work with the situation and understand what the risks and rewards are and make better decisions.
Joe, we keep talking about mindfulness. What, for those in our audience who haven't studied it, myself included, what is it, when you say mindfulness, what are you really talking about here?
There are two aspects to it. One is presence, and you could call it authentic presence, of genuinely being in the present moment and experiencing what is happening and what you're doing as you're doing it, moment by moment. The other aspect is kind of a vigilance of knowing where you are in relation to that. So being aware, if you have drifted into a daydream, if you are ruminating over and over again about something that happened in the past, I like to say you keep replaying it as if maybe it'll come out differently sometime, one of those times. You're really not taking advantage of your present experience. So mindfulness is the practice of coming back to the present moment again and again when the mind wanders into the past or the future. And it's a practice that you do in a formal way of sitting quietly, working with your breathing, your posture, and noticing how your thoughts come and go and when they take you away from the present moment. And then mindfulness in action is putting that into practice in everyday life so that when you're doing the dishes, you're doing the dishes. When you're talking with somebody, you're genuinely being there and present for them rather than thinking about what you're going to say next. You can actually hear what they're saying now. That's a great illustration of mindfulness.
Okay, that helps. Now, I don't want to oversimplify this, but is there something you can pass on to our audience today that would help them when they catch themselves in the middle of things, sort of wandering? How do they, what would you tell me as a quick tip to deal with that?
Okay, I can do that for you right away. And that is, our mind can wander into the past and the future, but how about your body? Can you send your body into the past or the future?
Nope.
No, so you tune into your physical presence. You tune into your physical presence, your posture, and ideally, your breathing. Because your breathing is a really strong indicator. You know, when we're very nervous and uptight, our breath gets very short and shallow. When we're relaxed, the breath flows. And you can start to feel the tension or the relaxation in your body. And then you can use your breath to kind of settle you down. So we use the breath to settle and center. So the first thing I'd like you to do, if you're listening to this broadcast live or you're listening to the podcast, take a deep breath in, and as you breathe out, feel yourself, if you're standing up, feel your feet sinking into the ground. If you're sitting down, feel your sit bones sinking into the chair, and let yourself settle. Take a full breath. Let it all the way out. Wait a second. Breathe in again and let it all the way out. And when you do the third breath, breathe in, let it out slowly, and as it goes out and you feel settled, you'll notice a kind of quietude and presence that happens. There's a direct experience of mindfulness right there.
Great tip. Great tip. Thank you very much for that.
My pleasure. And, you know, there's a story. I was coaching my sister. She works for a large corporation that produces lots of movies and books and cartoon characters. I can't say what it is, but you can probably guess. And she and a coworker were having a meeting, and the coworker came in and said, "We have to do this, we have to do this, we have to do this." And they started spinning through all these things and getting all just running around in circles, and she said, "Hang on a second, I need to breathe." She took three full breaths, just the way I described. By the third one, he was breathing with her, without her telling him to. And at the end, they were both quiet. And she said, "Now what's our agenda?" And they went through things steadily, point by point, and got a tremendous amount done. So this is what mindfulness can do. It can bring you down from spinning around and chasing your own tail and get you settled and centered and working through things one by one.
Great tip. One that we can use, one I can use multiple times during the day. So thank you for that.
Do it when get to a red light instead of getting all worked up about why it's red. Take a breath and settle into the driver's seat. And you'll be ready when it turns green.
You have a system that you use for performance coaching called your PAR approach. Do you want to explain that to our audience?
Yes, it's the and of course it originated with golf. So PAR is a common term for golf, and it stands for preparation, action, and response to results. Now, for business, I suppose we could call it PER, preparation, execution, and response to results, but the PAR approach, everything you do has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Beginning, it's the planning and preparation. If you prepare properly, you'll be in a much better position when it comes time to execute or act. The three aspects of preparation: clarity, commitment, and composure. A clear picture of where you want to go, a commitment to your plan, so you're not waffling or having second thoughts. And then composure, just what I talked about, having yourself settled and centered and tuned into what's going on in the present moment. The action comes from, again, acting with awareness, with focus, but also with relaxation, so that you're not uptight and making everybody around you uptight, but you're also tuned in and focused so that your communication isn't vague and easily misunderstood. And then the third part is response to results. And in the business world, there's a model that's used in Japan called Kaizen, which means continuous improvement. So at every point in the process, after you've gone through a stage in your execution, you stop and you reflect and you review and you say, what can we learn from this that can affect our preparation for the next stage? And therefore, you actually improve as you are performing. And I work with golfers on this so that they actually get better as they play rather than struggling all the way through a round. And for business, you tune in before things get carried away and take you down a path that leads you away from where you really want to go. So you can continually adjust and make small adjustments rather than find yourself with a disaster on your hands.
Good tips. You know, somebody just sent us a Twitter question in and wanted to know, how does this relate to multitasking? Can we multitask and still be mindful?
Well, the interesting thing about multitasking is that you can't actually multitask. Unless you're like a one-man band where you can play the cymbals with your knees while you're blowing on a kazoo and your hands are beating or playing the piano, you know. But even the one-man band, their mind moves from one thing to another. The nature of the mind is that it focuses on one thing at a time. Trying to do too many things at once degrades the quality of the performance. Now, what multitasking, the way you can accomplish multitasking is compartmentalize and do one thing at a time, but just do a piece of it. So you have one segment of your activity, you do it, and then you switch over to something else. So in an hour, you may work on four different tasks, but you only work on one of them at a time, because a lot of the studies show interruption really degrades performance as well. So if you're working on something for 15 minutes, don't check your emails for 15 minutes. I think one of the toughest things is working on the computer and having email alerts coming up as you're working. It's a distraction. So you need to focus on one thing at a time and then move from small pieces of the task, one to another, to another, to another, and allot yourself that scheduling. That's how I would suggest multitasking.
And, you know, it would seem to me that sort of following that trend, that taking things in small pieces might help me be more mindful, more present with what I'm doing, because I'm having to focus for a shorter duration.
It actually allows you to be more mindful because you don't have to hold your mind on something for a long, long, long period of time. So if we recognize that that's the nature of the mind to move from one thing to another, then work with that and find your ideal attention span. And it's different for everyone.
Changing habits. You've got a method that you use.
My method for changing habits, the initials are INJA, INJA. And it is intention plus non-judgmental awareness. I actually discovered this in a Buddhist text over 400 years old. And it uses mindfulness, which is non-judgmental attention, awareness, non-judgmental awareness. So the key to mindfulness is that you notice what you're doing while you're doing it without judging it as good or bad, but just noticing it. Now, you want to reflect afterwards. That's the PAR approach, the response to results. You reflect afterwards on how effective you might have been. But while you're doing something, you just notice. The intention part is the motivator. It's what drives us. There's a joke in psychology. I'll ask you, how many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know.
Only one, but the light bulb has to want to change. So there's the intention model. Okay? You have to have a strong intention, and as human beings, we move in the direction of our intentions. The analogy I like to use is like a flower or a plant. The leaves turn towards the sun. That's part of its nature. Part of our nature is we move in the direction of our intention. If all of our intention is about fear and avoiding things, we don't move at all. That's how we get stuck. But whatever direction we want to move, we have to have a strong intention to move in that direction. Then, if we notice our habits and we say, as we're going through our day, how many times am I doing the habit that I want to move away from? And how many times am I doing the habit that I want to move toward? And I'll give you an example. I had one golfer who, he came to me because his friends didn't want to play golf with him anymore. Because he complained after every shot. He complained about something. He was always whining. And I used this method. I said, okay, don't try to stop complaining. But what I want you to do is count how many times you complain. Just notice. Without judging yourself as good or bad, just notice how many times. So he came back the next time. He played four times in between. The first time he went out, he had 60 complaints. Now, this was a club pro. He shot even par. He shot 72. And he complained on 60 of the shots.
That makes it even worse.
Even worse. Now, the next, I said, don't judge it. Just notice. The next time he went out, 27 complaints. The third time he went out, 7, and the fourth time he went out, no complaints. And what he discovered was a positive attitude replaced them. I didn't tell him what to replace them with, but he discovered that instead of complaining about hitting it into the rough, he said, well, if I just chip out to here, it's a place I can hit a 9-iron onto the green, and I get a chance to save par. And he'd never thought about things that way before. He'd always just complained about how bad things were. So that's how fast this non-judgmental awareness and intention habit-changing technique can work. In fact, it worked for my sister. Her son was 8 years old, and he was still sucking his thumb. And we did this technique for him, and 3 days later, he was done.
Wow.
So it's very simple, but very powerful.
Of course, the underlying premise here is the person has got to have a strong intention or desire to change.
A strong desire to change, intention. That's right. That's the I part of Inja.
And I think that's why so many people fail in changing their habits, is because they really don't have the intention. They talk about it, but they really don't have the desire to do anything about it.
That's true. And sometimes the difficulty and the fear of what it would be like without the habit overwhelms the intention. Because we have a strong quality of needing an identity. And if our identity is somebody who does that habit, we might be afraid to be somebody who doesn't do that habit. Who's that? And this is part of how I work with the principle of the gold statue. See, you don't have to worry about who that is. You have an abundance of wisdom and goodness that's going to come out and fill that space where that habit was.
You know,
that's the positive attitude.
I like it. Thank you for explaining. I've been looking at that for 2 days, trying to figure out what INJA meant when you sent me your notes.
That was just to get you inquisitive.
Well, you got it. Inquisitive, I've gotten in abundance.
Good. That's good.
Look, explain to me here, we're talking about changing things. I lost where I was going there. I want to come back on that.
Well, I know that you wanted me to talk about some examples of the Zen stories that I use in my coaching.
Yeah, and in doing that, too, what I was going to ask you is, one of the things that you mentioned to me the first time you and I talked that kind of stuck with me is that you are actually coaching people in golf, about golf, on the phone or using Skype. And it's like, this was so foreign to me that you would actually take a physical activity and be doing it audio coaching, that I want to hear more about that.
Well, you know, a lot of executive coaching is done by phone and by Skype or FaceTime, you know, video conferencing.
Sure, I do a lot
because
of that.
It's about communication skills. It's about working through issues that we're talking through. Well, the mental game in golf, if someone describes what's going on with them, I've worked with enough golfers from beginners to the pro level and understand how golfers get in their own way. So once they start talking about it, I can really understand what's going on with them, and we talk about these principles of the par approach. So we talk about clarity and visualization of the shot. We work on commitment of what club you picked, what target you have, and can you really commit to it, and work with risk-reward. I mean, in business, we work with risk-reward all the time, don't we?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, in golf, it's the same thing. It's about risk reward. And clearly, I just gave instruction to your audience on how to work with breathing. So yeah. We do that over the phone. Now, if I have Skype or FaceTime, I can actually work with somebody's posture over the phone. And of course, you know, in golf, the closer you get to the hole, the more the mental game comes into play. And putting is almost entirely, mental. It does not take a tremendous amount of physical skill to move the flat face of a putter back and forth a few inches. But the pressure that comes on of, I should make this putt, I ought to make this putt, what's wrong, you know, all of those things, it becomes the mental game. And I can work with a player on their putting routine over Skype or FaceTime very, very easily. We just set the computer up, and I can see what they're doing, and I can even time it. So it's really not hard. And before that, yes, I did a lot and made a tremendous amount of difference for players over the phone, because it's all about attitude and confidence. And if they understand how to approach the game, then they can bring confidence, and that lets them get out of their own way and let their talent come through.
The concept, I don't mean to belittle this, but it's so simple and I have such a difficult time grasping it, that it, in the golf you're talking about, it's not about muscle training, it's about mental training is what
That's
I'm hearing
exactly
you say.
Right.
And I'm trying to put that together with business, in that we focus so much on mechanics of solving problems, when really, you know, if I buy into what you're saying, and I do, it's probably more impacted by the mental game, the mental state.
That's exactly right. And in business, what's more important than communication?
Yeah, nothing.
And if your communication is all bundled up with mental interference, you're going to be talking in one direction at one. You know how we point our fingers in opposite directions at different levels? And we don't connect. We're not talking in parallel. We're not even talking on the same level. We're not talking about the same things. We think we're using the same words, but the meaning is different. So we need to be able to clarify our communication. And for leaders, you have to be able to speak in the language of the people that you're talking to. They say that great teachers could speak 1,000 languages. Well, that's a metaphor for saying they spoke the language of whoever it was that they were working with. If they're talking with a musician, they use musical instruments as an example. If they're talking with an athlete, they use sports as an example. So I try to find everybody I work with in whatever field they are, I try to find what other things that they do that are familiar to them that I can use as a metaphor. So they can take something they already know how to do and apply it to a task that they haven't learned how to accomplish. And they accomplish it much, much faster.
You know, you make me realize something that just happened to me personally today was I was making a presentation to a potential new client who is now going to be a new client. When I came back from the meeting, I thought, that went so well. Why did that go so well? Why did it seem so easy? What did I do different? That was it really clicked.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that his background in the building business coincided with my background in the building business. So the metaphors, the examples that we were using talking about coaching were ones that we both were comfortable with, which is exactly what I hear you saying.
You spoke his language.
I spoke his language.
There you go.
Yeah. Only 999 more to go. Well, look, Dr. Joe, we're going to wrap up here in a minute. So, I kept interrupting you. What else? Is there something else you want to share with our audience that you want to be sure we cover before we wrap up here today?
Well, you asked me what I felt was one of my great accomplishments in the world of golf, and that was that I was able to help both a man and a woman reach the number one world ranking on their respective tours. I helped Vijay Singh get to number one in the world, and he was the only one that displaced Tiger from number one in the whole first decade from 2000 to 2009. And then I also helped Christy Kerr get to number one in the world on the LPGA Tour. And she was the first American to do so. So I'm very proud of those accomplishments.
And when is going to be your next great accomplishment?
That's a really great question. I think working with the president, either this one or the next one, on mindfulness.
And, boy, I would
and
love to see
being
you do that.
The present president.
I think you would have done a service for the whole world if you could do that with either the current or the future. And I would wish you luck in it and offer any help I could ever give you.
Thank you.
Well, look, share with our audience. How do people get in touch with you?
My website is zengolf.com. That's ZENGOLF.com. When you get there, you'll see three portals: business, life, and golf. So for business coaching, life coaching, and golf coaching. And for golf, any other sports. You can email me at info@zengolf.com. Find me on Facebook, and as your previous guest, LinkedIn and Twitter. Facebook, I think we're zengolf.masteringthementalgame. And LinkedIn is Dr. Joe Parent. And Twitter is Zen Golfer. You can find me in any of those ways. And for the Southern California clientele, please come up to the Ojai Valley Inn and Spa. And I also travel to L.A. and Orange County quite a bit. And I'm happy to meet you anywhere between San Diego and Santa Barbara. For international and national, zengolf.com. I work with phone and Skype and FaceTime, and we can make a relationship. And if there's any way that I can help, let me know.
Dr. Joe, thank you very much for being with us today. It's been tremendously educational and inspiring both. I won't forget that I'm going to send you on the names of some CEOs who have great stories that I think you might want to use. And I look forward to meeting you personally.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate it. And let's stay in touch.
We will. And welcome to the Coaching Perspective business community. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Have a great evening. Well, we've been listening to Dr. Joe Perrin, the author of Zen Golf, Mastering the Mental Game. And if you've been listening to the broadcast, it's become very clear that any performance in any area has to do with mastering the mental game. And that's kind of what I walked away with. And it's so obvious, it's pathetic that I struggle with it. But hey, live and learn. Let me say a couple of commercials here. I want to be sure and remind you that September 12th, the Orange County chapter of the International Coach Federation is going to be having its meeting. A great panel talking about different ways in which to build your business. A speaker talking about how to use a book. A speaker talking about how to use internet radio. A speaker talking about how to use someone else to solicit clients for you if that's not what your strong suit is. So we have got some great people, Dr. Frumi Barr, Dr. And Mike Raffiti. Great program. Go to ICFOrangeCounty.com or CoachesOfOrangeCounty.com and sign up for that September 12th meeting. Next week, be sure to be back with us. September, summer is over. We will be starting our fall series, and it is going to be interesting. We've not too sure who we have next week. The week after, I think it's the 12th, we're going to have Sue Parks, who is the CEO and founder of Walk Styles, going to talk to us a little bit about fitness, something that we all need to think about. You know, it's too late. We didn't fit in that bikini, didn't look any good in that Speedo, but hey, just because it's fall and we're going to start wearing bulky clothes, there's no reason to ignore the fitness. So we're going to listen to Sue talk about that, and also the fascinating story about how she has become such a successful entrepreneur. So this is Doug Gefeller thanking you for joining us today, hoping that we have provided you with information that you can use right now to increase and grow your business. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that helps you stay in the moment. Look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with your host, Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.